Oh, hello, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I have a special announcement. We are so close to our 350th episode, and in order to celebrate that, we're doing a live episode. That's right. We're doing a live episode recording on Monday, June 10th at 7 p.m. at the Triad Theater here in New York City. Now, if you can't make it out, don't fret. There is a live stream option for you all. We will be discussing the 2007 movie Across the Universe. So again, if you want to come out and celebrate 350 episodes with myself and a panel of friends, we will be at the Triad Theater on Monday, June 10th at 7 p.m. In-person tickets are $15 with a two-drink minimum, and the live stream has a tiered system where there's a $15 and a $20 ticket. For more information or to buy tickets, check out the link in all my socials at ButASongPod. And now, on with today's episode.
Life's but a song, so you can sing along with a special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today is a special returning guest who didn't want to do this, but I made him do it. It's Colden Lamb, everyone. Woo!
It's NBC Live and the Sound of Music.
Oh, my God. Colden, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
You know, ready to talk about German epic theater?
Oh, would you shut up about that? Take a shot each time he asks me about German epic theater.
It kind of works with this one.
No, not this one. This
kind of.
Okay, just because there's Nazis in it does not mean...
That's the connection. And we're here today. Okay, so welcome to Live Month. We're doing...
Live month, it's live month.
Live month, yeah. We're covering all the lives that happened on NBC and Fox this month, and I hate myself already. Because we're starting with the 2013 The Sound of Music Live. The screenplay is by Austin Winsberg, music by Richard Rodgers, lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein II, and was directed by Rob Ashford and Beth McCarthy Miller, and according to IMDb, a live telecast of the famous Rodgers and Hammerstein musical.
This is the one that started all the lives. It got the ball rolling.
Okay, so no?
Well, yes. So for those who don't know, let's go over a history a bit.
A brief history, yes.
Back in the 1950s, NBC did a couple of live televised musicals, as they did televised operas. The most popular of them being Mary Martin's Peter Pan. Another example is Cole Porter's Aladdin.
Oh, and that tradition... I was going to say Cinderella.
And Cinderella. Oh, my goodness. Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yes.
And then in the 60s, there was a televised version of Carousel. And it kind of, and then in the 70s, there was It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman. And it sort of dwindled down from there. But the most popular ones were definitely Mary Martin's Peter Pan and the Rodgers and Hammerstein adaptation of Cinderella. In the 90s, the Wonderful World of Disney did a little mini revival of, they weren't live musicals, but they were televised musicals.
And we've covered a couple of them on this podcast. There was Polly. There was the Cinderella, again, with Brandy. That is probably the most popular one out of all of them. But then...
There was Annie and Geppetto.
Yes.
And Music Man. And the last one they did was 2005, Once Upon a Mattress.
Which I haven't covered yet. But in 2013, NBC was like, let's do this again.
But their shtick was, which is different, is that all the other ones were pre-recorded. They were like TV movies. These went back to the original formats of the 50s in which they were live.
Yeah. Like it's, you're basically watching a show. And that is the whole point of these TV movies, quote unquote. I'm using that term loosely because that's the only way I can like define them. So with this one being the first one, I don't know why they picked it. I also don't know why they picked Carrie Underwood. Because
I have a couple of theories on that.
Yeah, because I was like, well, I know she won Idol, but that was in 2005. So, and she had an album come out in 2012. So it wasn't like she was big in the pop culture zeitgeist at the time. No, I'm not shading her. She did her job, although she was not the best actor. But like,
I'd say she was Carrie underwhelming.
She was, yeah, and then Carrie overwhelming in the vocal department, because my God, was she belting a lot.
Yeah, but let's go back a bit.
Okay, so what are your theories as to why?
Why Sound of Music? Well, here's the thing. As you know, starting also, this is also a history of television. As you know, during the holiday seasons, television stations play family movies the most, and the one that really got the ball rolling was Wizard of Oz back in the 60s and 70s. They used to play that on television, and that's what helped Wizard of Oz become the classic that it is. ABC, in more recent years, does The Sound of Music. They play it during the holidays, and it gets a lot of viewings because
it's the Sound of Music. Just, when you said holiday season, I was like, when did this happen now? It happened on December 5th, 2013. So now it makes sense why The Sound of Music.
Yeah. All the NBC lives, not the Fox lives, but the NBC lives always happen around the holiday season.
Holidays, yeah.
Which is why when you later watch Peter Pan Live, they really went full out and they had the nursery scenes take place during Christmas.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Well, in any case, that's the real reason. And I think they really wanted to do Peter Pan first, but they wanted to do a testing run to see, you know, is this popular enough? Will we get ratings? Will we get views? And so they chose Sound of Music. Also, because Sound of Music is a lot easier to put on compared to something like Peter Pan that has multi-sets and flying and such.
A lot of moving parts to it, yeah.
And again, Sound of Music is just so popular. And it proved correct that people tuned in. And they did it before the ABC Sound of Music also, which helped get it very high ratings and all got it to be the thing that it is, and what helped get Peter Pan Live to be greenlit and all the other lives to be greenlit down the road was because of the success of this one. And none of the other lives have matched the success ratings wise as Sound of Music Live has.
And it's surprising because like I was watching this. I never saw this before. Have you watched it before?
Yes. I was one of the people who watched it when it came out in 2014.
I did it. I think I was working, but I was just like, a couple of times I wrote down, why are they screaming? Like,
you mean Carrie, or who else was screaming?
In the processional, the nuns are screaming when they're in
but
the.
That's the operatic Latin mass,
right? But I'm just like
big operatic sound.
So sound was a big issue in this. I felt like not only the vocal chest voice usage of Carrie Underwood and like, you know, the screaming I just mentioned, but like microphones were dropping left and right.
Well, here's the thing is that looking back, and as you know, NBC sold this as a really big point that it was live and that anything could happen. So I think the point was they were really trying to get people in to see, is there going to be a mistake? Oh, look out. It's live. Anything
and there were
can
mistakes.
Happen.
And there were mistakes, I noticed.
Now, but compared to Peter Pan Live,
I haven't seen that one yet, so I can't.
Okay. Well, when you watch it, you'll see a gigantic mistake, which makes all the ones that happen in Sound of Music sound small. Now, the main problems that I noticed was just microphones. Some of them just got tuned on just a little late, and the only other problem was it was a simple mistake, and it was brushed off, and it was fine. Which was during, right before So Long Farewell, someone accidentally stepped on Laura Benanti's dress, but she played it off. That's like,
oh, I noticed a
two
couple
and a for a 2 hour live television show,
right?
With that being the only thing wrong, that's fine.
I noticed a couple
of
line flubs, but I was like, whatever.
Yeah, and one time, one actor I think it the was butler two. went up two.
I
Still, the
I oh
first
I
one went two.
noticed. I noticed Audra McDonald actually messing up one of her lines. It felt like it was in the beginning. I blacked it out already. But it was just like she said a different word than what was like you know when you're on stage and instead of saying "Hey Hector," you go "Hey Jules, Hector." Like you say the actor name or something. I feel like it was something along those lines. And then later, Carrie Underwood calls the captain Mother Superior or something like that. Like something
Yes.
along those lines. And I was like, that's not right, I
But
think.
that's fine. I mean,
That's fine. Yeah.
for me personally,
That
there was
humanized
no one
them.
fell down, you know, like, or no one like completely flubbed a line or a set piece broke or a camera went off in the wrong direction or you caught someone's mic like talking backstage. Like, there are worse things than going up on a
Yes.
line. And like, that happens all the time in stage performance as well. So like, I was fine with that. And like, I'll live. I can sleep at night. You know what I mean?
I think the sound person also hated Laura Benanti because it was mostly her mic that was not turned on at the right moment or
Well, it's hard for
on at
her
all, it
character.
felt like.
Yeah, because sometimes, because she comes into these weird random moments, her character Elsa does. And I'm sure the mic guy was just caught up too
Yeah,
late.
the sound technician was just like,
But again, that's life. It's live
It's live
theater.
theater,
Not live,
yeah.
excuse me, not live theater. It's live TV, and that
Well,
stuff happens all the time.
that's the
And
thing with these that that I feel like I'm going to say a lot this month is that they are doing the show. Like we the audience are seeing whatever the NBC director wants us to see, you know, like the television director wants us to see, but then there's also a stage director there who's telling them where to go and everything. And so like you can see in this one that like they still need to fill the stage and everything, and like even if you're not going to be seen on camera, you still have to stand there, child. Like you have to stand on your hit your mark and everything.
yeah,
So
so as you saw, there's two directors. It was Rob Ashford who did the theatrical directing, meaning that he staged all the scenes. And then it was up
yes.
to another director to help with camera positions, help with transitions, anything to deal with capturing on a live screen.
Actually, on this one, they don't denote who did what.
So in the credits, it was denoted that Rob Ashford did.
It did
As he was
the
titled
stage.
theatrical direction, and then the other director, I forgot what her name was, she did the direction for television. So
Beth
they
McCarthy
collaborated.
Miller. Just
Yes.
want to
So
say her
Rob
name.
Ashford did a rehearsal just like you would for any Broadway show. And then when they went into the
On
set
set.
where they were gonna record it, Rob Ashford and that director collaborated together to like take Rob Ashford's direction and then help with the TV screens. For example, there was in the DVD that I had, they had the making of the Sound of Music Live that showed some clips of what happened during the rehearsal process. And one particular example was when they were in the rehearsal space, they thought they would have enough room on the stairs during Do Re Mi to do certain choreography. But when they got to the physical space, and because where the camera was and where the stair was, they had to rearrange it. So that it
You
was
kind
that
of
kind of collaboration.
Oh no, you don't see. You just see at the end them in rehearsal and then what you see on camera. It's not like a full in-depth thing. It was like a shot or two of like
Yeah.
them in their rehearsal clothes and Carrie Underwood in all of her scarves.
And they also for Peter Pan Live, I think this, I don't know if they did it for Wiz Live, they did these like making of specials to be added in the DVD or, and they did it, they showed it in Thanksgiving to promote the live.
Oh, that's smart. That is actually really smart. And like, so with these, I feel like the goal is to introduce theater to those who can't go. Like, it's not easily accessible to them.
I don't think it was that reason. I think it was more just like to do it as a holiday special, which
Right,
is
but
why
like,
they only take place in December. I don't think it was like, let's bring live theater into your home. It was more like, let's do a special TV event during the holidays.
I mean, I feel like that's also, I mean, well, any musical movie, I feel like that's like a goal at least to introduce musicals to non-music, like people who love musicals but can't go to like a theater. Like they don't have theater in their town or something like that. I mean, the if somebody was inspired to go into theater after watching this, kudos to them. But for me, I was just not paying attention to this one because I was just, I don't, I'm gonna say something that I never thought I would say. I really enjoyed the child actors in this one. They were very well done. They
Yeah, there were.
surprisingly, I was like, Gretel is outshining Carrie Underwood right now, like in her acting abilities.
I didn't want to tear down Carrie Underwood, and it's not my objective to rip her a new one. But and I thought going into it, I heard a lot of comments that she was terrible, she was awful. And when I saw it 10 years ago, I didn't understand, acting performances as I do now, and
Right.
I thought she was fine. But and I said, well, it's Maria. You can't flub that up. Anyone can play Maria. Come on. And then I watch her, and unfortunately her performance was just a little bit static. She was just saying lines. Because the thing with and what I watched this is what I realized is that Maria has a gigantic character arc. And this and unfortunately the script isn't really well written for her to show her development. But she starts out as a naive, mischievous child.
Right.
Despite her good intentions, she's still mischievous. She's still full of bounce. She's full of energy. She needs to do something. And then she learns how to be a teacher. She learns how to be a governess. And then that her love for the captain conflicts. And then after the honeymoon, she becomes a woman and she becomes a mother. So she and she has this big arc, and unfortunately, Carrie didn't give me that arc because the way she started this the scenes of, oh, mother, that was my mountain, is the same as, oh, Georg, we have to escape Austria. I didn't see an ebb and flow. I saw her acting the scenes, but I didn't
Yeah.
see an overarching character. Now, I will say Julie Andrews did not give me the same either, to be fair. Julie Andrews,
Okay.
I feel like just played, now she did just like Carrie. She played the scenes, and I didn't really see a maturity in Julie either. I just saw, Julie Andrews is a phenomenal actress and a phenomenal singer, but I don't really see the character journey in either Julie or Carrie Underwood. And I wonder if there has to have been a Maria that explored that somehow. That's what I noticed
I
watching it.
wonder if Laura Benanti played Maria.
Oh, ooh, girl, you did not do your homework.
I did not do my homework, no.
As you know, Laura Benanti's big break at the age of 19 was doing the 1999 revival tour of Sound of Music. She was Maria. That was her big break.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah, and then she was, well, yeah, the tour you said? I see
She
that she's on
the re
Broadway.
so Rebecca Luker did it in New York, and then when it went on tour,
Oh, yeah.
Laura Benanti did it.
She's the replacement. She was a postulant on Broadway at first. I understand why they cast Carrie Underwood because she has the name and the draw, and that's also the thing with
I think it
musical
was they just
movies.
needed a name because it's not like, come on, country singers, come watch a Sound of Music, I think they just they needed. It wasn't enough just to do the Sound of Music live. You needed to have some sort of name to assure people that, you can come in. It's going to be safe,
And like she did sing the shit out of the songs. It's like did a great job with them. It just didn't.
We're
It
just
just
so
felt.
used to Julie Andrews with her lyrical golden voice that when you have these songs belted, it's a little jarring.
It is a little distracting, but like towards the end, I was still. I felt like she wasn't so chest voicey with the end of the songs than she is at the beginning with like the Sound of Music, the titular song, it's totally like big and she's very loud. I don't mean like volume wise. I mean like, she's playing to the back of the audience basically. But I
Well,
feel
thank
like
God.
towards the end, like when they're at the festival, she's a little more reserved. Like vocally, she's a little more reserved.
Well, she was, yeah. I
Yeah.
don't know if that was because of the song she was singing at the Salzburg Festival, or if she was just, winding down. I don't know what the case would have been.
So the one thing I'm always confused about with this is how much time actually passes between her leaving and then coming back to the family. In this one, it felt like it was 3 days. In the movie with Julie Andrews, it felt like maybe a month. So I'm not, they don't really specify, and that's just a, it's just a weird,
I think
disjointed
as an
thing.
audience, we just know that time has passed. I don't think we need an exact date. We just know that time has passed enough for these children to start missing Maria, to her absence having a deep effect on their ability to sing in front of Max. I don't think it needs to have a like a date stamped on it.
Well, she got a
And the
haircut
only
in
time they
between.
really stamp a date is when Max mentions that the Salzburg Festival of 1937, just to remind us of
Yeah.
what I think that's the only time a year is mentioned within the script. You will also note that this, the live, is a faithful, very faithful adaptation of the stage play.
Okay, I
Now,
was
as you
gonna ask
know, the
that.
movie
Move things around and they change
moved things around,
everything.
and it's one of those unfortunate things. It's like Grease, where the movie version is better than the stage version. So when people go to see a stage version of Grease or Sound of Music or want to produce it, or even West Side Story, they change things around in there.
In
When
both
people,
movies, they did. They
yeah,
changed different things around.
but especially the 61, for example, the 61 West Side Story had all the Sharks singing America with alternated lyrics, while in the original stage version, it's just the Shark Girls and it's more of a banter rather than social commentary. So when people go to direct and watch things like West Side Story or Sound of Music and they see the stage version, they're like, that's not the movie. This is terrible.
Right, like
Because for some examples for our listeners is that My Favorite Things, which is originally sung, well, in the movie version, that is, it's sung as the thunderstorm song in which everyone's scared. So when we're scared, let's think about our favorite things. While in the stage version, My Favorite Things is sung in the office of the Mother Superior as just a standalone song. What's that
And it.
song you sing in the garden? Raindrops on Roses. While and in the stage version, the thunderstorm song is another just song by itself, which is, if we just sing, everything will
It
be
was the
fine.
lonely
High on a hill lived
goatherd.
the lonely goatherd.
Right,
And
because.
Lonely Goatherd became a puppet play.
Yeah. Well, the thing about My Favorite Things is that it sounds. It feels like it's canon in the universe of this musical. Because the way that Audra's like, oh, I love this song. And then she sings the same exact lyrics. And you're like, so is this like a nursery rhyme in your world? Or what's going on here? Yes, Audra McDonald is in this as well. Hello, Audra. Welcome back. Missed you.
Yeah, and it's Audra McDonald. I have no comments. She did her job.
No notes. She did it.
She found a great, because as you know, in the Mother Superior in the film, Maria, what is it you can't face about Captain Von Trapp? You know about that story, right? Do you?
She says can't face, but because of her accent.
Oh, you don't know the story. Oh, this is one of the great gay legends of Sound of Music.
The cunt,
So.
I know you hear cunt face,
So
but
yeah, that's
it's
the thing is that the Mother Superior in the film, the line is, Maria, what is it you can't face about Captain Von Trapp? But because this woman, I don't think she was even British, does this faulty British accent, it sounds like, Maria, what is
what
it you
is it? You
can't
cunt
face
face.
about Captain Von Trapp? And so that's become a banter and it's lilting all
Speaking
the
of
time.
accents,
But hold
is.
on, one second. Going back to my original point, I'm sorry.
Okay.
The Mother Superior in the film is very strict and stern, while Audra, although she is strict and stern, it's what she does very well is she's strict, but then she leans back a little bit. The famous ex another good example of this is when she's like, "Don't be vain, my child, but you look beautiful." Like she has an equal balance of
Yes.
being strict yet a loving and kind, soulful person,
I
rather
think
than the. I
because
think the Mother Superior in the film is just very teacheresque and very strict and stern.
I think it's also because the Mother Superior in the film is so much older than Maria, than
Than Audra.
Well, yeah, and then and Audra and Carrie Underwood are maybe closer in age. I don't know their ages. I'm not going to pretend like I know their ages, but at least they look, it looks like she's maybe 10 years older than Carrie Underwood. And so there's still like that. We're kind of close in age, so we're like gal pals and everything, but I'm still your superior, so I have to chastise you, but like I see you, we're cool. That's how I read it, at least.
Now, what did you want to say about accents?
Who's doing an accent in this? Is anybody doing an accent? Because it
Well,
feels like
it's the
every once
same
in a
as the
while.
film in every stage version. Everyone does. I mean, I think Laura Benanti was doing a little bit of mid-transatlantic, but that comes with Elsa. And I know that the gentlemen who were playing the Germans had a little bit of a German accent when they spoke.
But like,
That's
did
natural for Sound of Music.
Stephen Moyer playing the captain, it felt like he was at some points doing an accent and some points not doing one. So I was just like,
I didn't notice that, but I believe it if you said so. And that sometimes happens. I mean, like when you're playing a strict and stern person who's giving out orders, it's natural to go to that, James Mason land.
him acting stern in the beginning was just not good.
I thought it was,
But
well, the thing is the father has to be soulless at the beginning, right? And just bark out orders, and then it's not
yeah.
till his children sing that he starts to warm up. However, I will say, and again, I don't like to crap on my two leads, but the gentleman who played the captain, I feel like he, from my personal take when I watched it, I really wanted to like him. And I wonder how Plummer had this like this mysterious, sexy energy about the captain. This the captain in the live adaptation, I felt he was either strict or kind. It just
There
felt
was
like he was
no,
just playing two things.
yeah.
Like he was either strict, angry, or kind. Well, Christopher Plummer, he like I said, he had this weird, mysterious energy about him. Whenever like I'm thinking about the scene after Ralph delivers the telegram. And Elsa's like, "You're in a different world. Where are you?" And the way he acts, and the blueberry scene in the film, the way he—it's too early for blueberries. Like, it's just there's something mysterious about Plummer's adaptation of the Captain. While this one, I just felt just played the scenes as is, just same as Carrie Underwood. No real arc.
I think it also comes with age, because like these two felt very young, like they needed a little more experiences to understand some nuances.
I thought the captain was an appropriate age. Now you come to think of it, if I don't want to pick on Carrie Underwood. I swear to God, she did a great job for what she had, and
Yeah,
I don't like to
and
pick her on.
surprisingly,
However, she,
because
I think she was a little too old to play Maria. Maria needs to be, straight out of college, bright-eyed. Sarah Brightman-esque, just like, what's this? Oh, shiny object. Rather, and I felt like Carrie Underwood, without that character arc, was too mature to play Maria.
oh, and see, I thought she was too young.
Well, no, because Maria has to be, like, she's naive. She starts out naive, and then she becomes mature.
Got it.
And I didn't really get that from Miss Underwood. And again, I don't want to pick on her. She did a fine job, but if I had to nitpick, I don't like podcasts that like tear people down. And I
We're
hate
not, I'm
th and this
in.
is the first time I've ever on your podcast have has I've ever teared down actors before. And it's making me feel like really worried. I don't like to do it.
Oh, because she's gonna listen to this, of course, you know.
But my opinion is an opinion, so I would love to, if anyone's listening, if you have a different opinion about Carrie Underwood or anything I said, please let me know. I love dialogue. I'd love to talk. I'd love to understand. And again, my first objective is not to tear down people.
No, and I heard the same things about how she was terrible and everything, and I was just like, I mean, she's not an actor. That's the thing. Carrie Underwood is a singer first. She's not like who's a good example that I
Laura
can.
Benanti.
Laura Benanti. Yes, Or well, I was going from, like, Renee Rapp. How about that? She's because Renee Rapp is like getting big in the music industry. She's also have done Broadway, and she did the Mean Girls movie, and she's done a couple of acting gigs here and there. But Carrie Underwood is like predominantly known as a singer, so of course she's going to sing the shit out of everything. But when she's acting, I think. I don't know. I feel like she would do, and I don't mean to be shady when I say this, but I feel like she could have a healthy career in like Hallmark or Lifetime movies, 'cause like those are rapid fire, really fast filming. So you have to like just know the word. You just know the words and everything. And she had enough of emotion. She had enough emotional response in this that it like would work for those, but I feel like for this type, she needed a little bit more emotions behind the words.
Yeah, and I think with this one, you made me think
And
about.
as and by when I say this, I feel like I'm more critiquing her than shitting on her. Right?
I just wonder
Okay.
if this was not the right project for her. Because when you were talking, you made me think of Reba McEntire, who is also a country
Reba.
star. Did I say Reba, or did
Reba.
I say?
No, I'm saying Reba because, you know, she was in the TV show Reba as well,
Yeah, but
where.
she did Annie Get Your Gun. And
Oh, she did do Annie Get Your Gun,
she did Annie Get
yes.
Your Gun, and she got wonderful reviews, and especially from the Times. But that was a musical comedy. Now, could Carrie Under I think Carrie Underwood could do Annie Get Your Gun because that's musical comedy. I feel like when you have a romantic Rodgers and Hammerstein show where you have to take a journey, maybe that was the flub, maybe question mark. Because you have to play a mother, you have to play a naive woman, you have to play a love scene, you have to play scared out of your life because the Nazis are coming scene. Like maybe it's not the right thing. Maybe she's better suited for musical comedy. I'm not sure.
Yeah, or
Rather
like a
than a
different
musical play.
or a different show entirely, 'cause maybe this was just
I could see her as 8-0 Annie, like totally.
Because even when she in Do-Re-Mi, when she brings up the guitar, it feels like she doesn't know how to play guitar.
Oh, she does. She does.
But
Even
like you,
the captain did not know how to play guitar, but he had to learn for this production.
but like watching her, I don't know if like maybe the nerves got to her or something, but there's moments where she's like just strumming and not even. Not moving her hand. And I had to look it up because I was like, I'm pretty sure Carrie Underwood in her career plays guitar. And she does. So it was a little.
Maybe she was nervous.
Yeah.
I forgive that because by the time she's strumming, the orchestra's in, so she could just do re mi, you know.
Oh, goodness. But yeah, I mean, and also, I was coming at this not. Knowing the stage version really, because I haven't seen the stage version, so this
Oh,
was my introduction
well,
to
how do
it.
you like the stage version versus the film?
So
Unfortunately,
this.
I like the film better because, again, a lot of the songs are just standalone. Like,
Yeah.
what do you sing in the garden, and what do you sing when you're afraid? While in the film, my favorite things I feel has a bigger purpose, and Lonely Goatherd works as a bonding song. And I'm trying to think of like another example of a
Like
song.
16 going on 17,
16
that
going to 17.
whole.
That trans the transition from scene into song was a little wonky.
But like the gazebo of it is just gorgeous. And to have them stand on a hill, that is. I hated that set piece. That set piece in this,
It's so
what.
hard to have artificial
Yeah.
nature. It's so hard, and they tried their best, poor dears.
Whereas watching the rest of it, you're like, wow, this is a really long set design you have, because you have the vestibule of the house, and then you have like the veranda, and then you also have the abbey that, and it felt like it was just one long line, because there is that moment toward after the party where Maria goes back to the Abbey and she literally, they slide a wall up. It was wonderfully done. And I'm actually
I was
complimenting
not a,
this.
yeah, I'm not a, and they also lifted up the thing for the processional. I wish it would have been more effective. I don't know if it was a camera thing and getting people through the door, but it would have been more effective if she opened the door and there was the abbey rather than
Oh,
slide up, go through. Same thing with, they didn't need to bring up the wall during the processional to reveal the priest.
And then
I
also at
mean,
the
it
end when they
still
go to
works as
the
a
festival,
theatrical. There was a way of them opening the curtain and the cameras from behind, and you see them going through rather than the other way around, where you're in the Salzburg Festival and you see them coming through the house. It'd have been more effective if there was a curtain. You know, the Von Trapps are standing, you're seeing they're behind, the curtain opens, and they walk directly into.
Yes, that would have been better, and it was also a little weird transitionally with their costumes to see them being forced to sing while wearing their performance costumes. And in the world of the show, we know that they have a few days until the performance. And so we're
I'd
seeing.
easily forgive that because you could justify it as they changed so they could show that we have our costumes on, you know? So we're legit. We're actually are going to sing at this festival. And
But you did ask me what I thought about
the
the
stage for,
differences.
yeah, the differences and
So
songs like How Can Love Survive and No Way to Stop It.
two out of the three songs, I understand why they cut it, because it was the two that you listed are the Max and
Elsa songs.
the what?
Max and Elsa.
Max and Elsa songs. But then Something Good, I was like, why was this one cut? I didn't. It felt like it could fit in the world of what the movie, the Julie Andrews movie,
Well,
presented.
here's the thing. Something Good was in the movie and was written for the movie. The original song that was in the stage version is a song called An Ordinary Couple, which is unfortunately a little bit of a lackluster Rodgers and Hammerstein love song, unfortunately.
When did they sing
But
Something Good?
they sing Something Good right after How Can Love Survive? And then it goes into Something Good. Now, every stage version since the film has replaced An Ordinary Couple with Something Good. Now, and that made me ask, if they kept Something Good for this live telecast, I'm surprised they didn't have Carrie Underwood sing I Have Confidence, which was not in the stage version, but was added in the film.
They didn't sing I Have Confidence.
I
You're
wonder if it's
right.
because, you know, they didn't have the set pieces to do I Have Confidence. I don't know if like she could have done it in the Abbey or, but again, in the stage version, I Have Confidence is cut, but was put in the 1998 revival with Rebecca Luker.
And is it done
Regionally, I don't
nowadays,
think,
or?
not regionally, and this is not done, no, but if they had the power to do it, I wonder why they didn't do it. But they did some, you know, something good.
So again, I was coming at this with my own biases, with only knowing the movie, but it's interesting. The choices that the movie made makes sense with the reordering and restructuring of things. I will never understand the reprise of Maria being sung at the wedding.
I know why it's
Never,
sung at the wedding.
ever. Because
Well,
the
here's
answer
the
to the
thing.
question of how do you solve a problem like Maria is to marry her off. That's it.
No, the answer is for her to find love and happiness, which is the captain and the children, which is the wedding. That's why they sing it. It's not a bitch and gripe number. Now, if Rodgers and Hammerstein only changed the lyrics to, that's how you solve a problem like Maria, that's how you pin a cloud and pin it down, they changed that word rather than how to that would have made sense, but they didn't change it. And then we have this whole debacle of people complaining about why the nuns singing that at the wedding, but it's to
And
make the
also,
audience think, how do you solve a problem, which is love and happiness through the marriage of Captain Von Trapp.
just to confirm, you said that this live is a good representation of the stage version, correct?
Yes, it takes the lines from the stage play verbatim.
So I felt like this one, the Nazi menace they always reminded you of it.
Yeah.
And in the movie, it felt like they did talk about it, and then they didn't talk about it for like an hour, and then all of a sudden they show up. In this one, they kind of remind you, no. And it gets worse and worse and worse every time. And I was here for that, because it was like, it was, because this the thing about this whole entity, not just the live, the musical, I mean, is that it's based off of real events. Loosely.
Very loosely.
Loosely.
Very, 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 very loosely.
Yeah, but it's based off of real events. So they have to, so the way that, and I think it's important that they mention that it's 1937, because like that's when it all like really started. You know, we have to remember that it wasn't just in the 40s. It was before then that the Nazis came to power and everything. And they did start slow, but built to this ultimate World War II explosion.
And I have to say, the sound of, and this is my personal opinion, the Sound of Music deals with the slow incoming of the Nazis better than Cabaret does. That's my personal opinion. Because with Sound of Music, in the very first scene with Captain Von Trapp, you hear little dialogues like, you know, if the Germans took over, we'd have better efficiency. And then all of it just slowly adds up until the Anschluss. With Cabaret, I feel like tomorrow belongs to me. Scene, 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 scene. The Nazis are here. You know, it feels like tomorrow belongs to me in the first act, and then we get to the party at Schultz's, and then the Nazis show up. It's more abrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than with Sound of Music, it's a slow build up to their arrival.
And like the other good thing about the stage, this version and the stage version, is that you see other employees at the house, and they all have their own personalities. So like when the Rolf shows up towards the end to deliver a message to the captain, and Maria's like, I'll take it, we're married, trust me. And then all of a sudden you see the butler come in, who is a Nazi sympathizer or part of the Nazi party. You're like, oh shit, this is real. This is it. This is the story. Where I feel like that's where the movie kind of failed.
Yeah, I don't even think in the beginning dialogue of 16 going on 17 in the movie, they had talks about the incoming German invasion.
Nope.
As they do in the stage version.
Yeah.
As Ralph does. And they, you know, Liesl stops the conversation, and then the conversation swifts and changes. But again, it was a slow build. And also what I realized watching this live that I haven't got from seeing the film version 600 times is that I was thinking about that scene of, oh, mother, this was my mountain. This was the mountain that found me and the mountain I love to sing on. That's how I found the nuns. I didn't realize that that scene is there because of the last scene, because the mountains are what saves Maria every time, or the mountains play an important part in Maria's life. So the mountains lead Maria to the nuns, and it is the mountains that help Maria escape when she is in need. On their way to, yes, to build a ski resort
in Vermont
and gift shop of the fictionalized story of their life. Yes. But it made me realize why that first scene happens from a dramaturgical standpoint. And it's very exciting. And the use of having the same mountain as the beginning of the show when Maria sings the title song, and then to have her climb that mountain at the end where she's just looking out, was beautiful. It really got that like dramaturgical point across, which I really liked.
We should also note that this is an Emmy winning TV movie special thing.
What did it win an Emmy for? Best
outstanding technical direction, camera work, video control for a miniseries, movie, or special.
Yeah.
I think it was also
go ahead.
It was also nominated for Outstanding Special Class Program and Outstanding Music Direction, but obviously did not win. Yeah, and Audra was nominated for a Black Reel Award for Outstanding Supporting Actress, TV, Movie, or Limited Series, and for a Golden Derby Award. Audra McDonald is the only one nominated for everyone here. Also, okay, changing subjects entirely. Max.
I love Christian Borle. I think this is a great character part for him.
How is he friends, though, with the captain? I was not paying attention to this at all. I'm not going to lie to you.
I don't know how they're friends. I think it's just, we just go along that they're friends, they're old friends, and their friendship is now starting to crack with Max being a bipartial bystander. But his main goal as a character within this show is to bring about that he's the one who kind of like the impetus for a singing group, because he's like, he organizes the concerts around Salzburg and he organizes festivals, which helps lead the Von Trapps to build themselves as a singing group, which is what they eventually are. That's what his character represents, I think.
They also sprinkled that a lot more throughout in the stage version that they do in the movie. Because in the movie, all of a sudden, it's like, we're doing a festival. You guys want to sing? And then use that as your escape? In this one, you hear him being like, I'm getting the festival together. I'm picking the groups. The kids can sing. No. Okay.
And like, in the film, he's more of a family friend, while in this one, he's more of a promoter and, you know, festival entrepreneur, you might say.
And in this one, I've definitely got more vibes that Max and Elsa are fucking.
As you know, in every single Rodgers and Hammerstein show, there's always a secondary couple. Ado Annie and Ado Annie and who's the guy who sings Everything's Updated in Kansas City? What's his name? But also there's Carrie Pipperidge. Oh.
Yeah.
And Mr. Snow. And
speaking of Audra.
Yeah. And then I'm trying to think, in South Pacific, who's the second? There is no secondary. Oh, no. In The King and I, the secondary couple is Loon Ta and
Tupton.
Tupton. So in Sound of Music, the secondary couple, although they're not technically together, is Max and Elsa.
But it does feel like, at least the way that Christian Borle and Laura Benanti played it, they're fucking.
It's very difficult for a man and a woman to be friends.
Well, because they have the two songs together that were cut for the movie, but it just felt like they got along better than Elsa and the captain.
Well, because they both are bystanders who only care about wealth. That's the reason why they get along so well. But but it could be assumed that the real reason why they are not together is because Max is a fop, because his role is rather foppish.
There was a moment in the live during the party where the captain walks in with Liesl and they're like, you know, he has an arm around her or something. And it made me think of Christopher Plummer and Sherman Carr's relationship that happened during the movie. And I was like, is this them giving an Easter egg to the audience about that actually happened behind the scenes?
No.
No, it was just a funny moment for me, because and probably you and everyone else and others who know it, where you're like, oh,
don't think that hard, honey. No.
It's a Sound of Music. Don't think that hard.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
We talked about Christian Borle. I wanted to make sure that we talked about him. The amount of, maybe I'll bring this up in Sharps, maybe I won't, but the amount of Broadway cameos or people who would have had big names on Broadway and now in 2024, 10 years later, now have big names on Broadway. The amount of people who are in this is insane. I know the father, who or the gentleman who played the father figure in Tuck Everlasting and Dear Evan Hansen, he's a party guest in one of the scenes. Ashley Brown is a maid in this, which I think is criminal. But she, each time she's on stage, she is acting as the maid, which is phenomenal. You have to go back, just watch the scenes with Ashley Brown. She is giving you a three-act opera in her face. And also, as you know, Ashley Brown would later go on to do a national tour of The Sound of Music, and she played Mother Superior. that tour went out in 2016, 2017. So that's a nice little Easter egg. I'm trying to think if there were any other. Christine Knoll, I believe her name is. She played the mother in the 2010 revival of Ragtime. She's one of the nuns.
The nuns.
There's another great actress. I forgot her name, but she's done a lot. She was in the original cast of Piazza and The Visit. And she also did King and I. I forgot her name. She's Elena.
Was she another nun?
She was one of the nuns. I feel so bad that I'm blanking on her name. But the amount of... Oh, and Charlie Williams, who also was the associate choreographer on this. He's in it, like, just so many, like, I know you, because you did this and you did that. It's fantastic. Yeah, I just love all the little Broadway cameos in this. And as you go through the lives, I'm sure you'll see a lot more Broadway cameos, particularly in Peter Pan Live and Annie Live and such.
So I even had to look up Michael Campagnano, I believe that's how you pronounce his last name, who played Rolf.
Yes, Carnegie Mellon, baby.
Who was a Fiero at one point in Wicked.
I don't know that show.
Oh, yeah, well, it's a little known show. I think it's going to make it. I feel like, though, the kids could have a career if they want
I'm
to
sure,
continue.
Well, I'm sure that this is what... If I don't know where these kids are, and I don't know them very well, but I'm sure that if they did go on to pursue acting, that this was a big help on their resume.
Right. They did it, and it's televised, and you can see, and it's they're real, basically. all right, let's get into Sharp and Flat, shall we?
It's now time for Sharps, and it's time for Flats now. If it's something we like, then it is a Sharp. And if it's something we don't, well, I'm afraid that's flat, dear. Now it's time to start.
Yes, as Colden sang it, in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. If we didn't like it, if that it could change, it's flat. Let's start with sharps, because I have planned a sexy segue from my sharps to my flat. So why don't you go first with your sharps?
Sure. The costume designs are fantastic. I can't imagine how difficult it is to not replicate the iconic film costumes, because they're just, you know, when you think Sound of Music, you think of Julie's, you know, black dress with a little white apron. And when you think of the curtains, you think of the green and the white.
I did like the play clothes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to disagree with you on some things, but the play clothes were cute. I like the curtains.
I think the costumes, I mean, Carrie's blue Drindle dress was beautiful. The red and the green that the family wears during the Salzburg Festival was a beautiful design. I thought not the butler. What's the woman who plays the female maid? Oh, I just answered it. What is a female butler? A maid. The head maid had this beautiful embroidered bodice and a beautiful, all the women had beautiful aprons on. I loved the costume design for this one. And the shoes were in particular were very beautiful. I'm trying to think if there was any other sharps. I'm just sharping that it happened, and I'm sharping that we have more musical theater on our television screens, and I'm glad that the lives exist. I really do. Some of them don't work, but I'm glad to have them than not have them at all.
Yes, there's one that I'm purposefully not doing because it's technically not alive. So we are not doing the Rocky Horror bullshit thing that they did. But my sharps... I first sharped Audra McDonald and Laura Benanti because they were such gems in this.
They were the real motorboat of this one.
They kept
it going.
I sharped the children. Those actors were great. I did So I sharped the transition from the house to the Abbey because of how theatrical it was. I do agree with you that there's probably something a little more theatrical and more cinematically theatrical that they could have done, because it is
Only
a
because
weird.
it's the house. Also, look, inside the house there's Abby, and you're like, was that house leading to the Abbey the whole time?
Because I feel like that was a miss in this, and I'm not flattering it, but it was a miss that like it ultimately is a movie that you all are doing. Yes, it's live, but we can do some cinematic stuff with this. You know, you're taking the time to rehearse all these camera movements and everything. So like could have done something a little bit more. I'm also sharping, this is gonna sound weird, but because of our conversation, it will make sense. I sharped how the Nazi menace gets more and more present because of, like I said, in the film version of it from the 60s, it's not really there. So at least it's
It's
there
there.
and
It's
it's
very small, but then boom, you're thrown with a
right.
bunch
Like
of Nazi flags, and you're like, where did that come from?
it's always looming, but you don't forget about it. They make you not forget about it. And then my last sharp is that I found this online for free.
Where did you find it for free?
I found it on Dailymotion. I sent it to you as well.
Oh, I wish I would have known that. Luckily, they had a copy available at the public library in San Diego that I got to get a copy. Go to the
So,
library, folks. A lot of
a
free
lot of free
DVDs
shit
there. A lot of
there.
free CDs. Don't buy stuff. Just get it from the library.
Especially half the shit I had to watch and I gave it money. My God. But my flat, let's get into flats now. My first flat is having to watch this with ads. So it made it even longer. And at one point, the player stopped. It was wild. Also, okay, you said you watched this on DVD. At one point, while I was watching this, there was a scroll at the bottom to donate to my local ACLU. Is that on the D? Was that
No, I'm
just.
sure that was a live they DVR'd it from the television, and what you're watching is the DVR'd version.
Well, because it was like link in description for it. And I was like, okay, let's check the description, see what's going on. Nothing. So I was like, is this from the actual airing? Is
No,
it.
no, no. They didn't do any of that nonsense.
Got
I
it.
think again, I think that what you watched was a probably bootlegged or DVR'd version of the live.
But another flat from Dailymotion is that the ads were happening in the middle of a song. Like
You should
this
have
has
gone to the
built-in
library,
commercial
John.
breaks. I know.
John,
I
do you know how
hate
many libraries in New York probably have a copy of The Sound of Music
that are
live?
all dusted over because nobody's taking them out.
Unfortunately.
Okay, so now we're getting into my flats for the actual thing. Not to be a bitch, but my first flat really is for casting Carrie Underwood. It's not, and as we said, this is not the project for
But
her.
she put butts in the seats, and that's all that
She
matters in business.
did. I feel like though she can do one of these, and I just don't know what.
I think a
So.
musical comedy.
Yeah,
Let's see
or
her out in a comedy.
it doesn't have to be a comedy, I feel like.
But she can't, well, she, from my opinion, she couldn't do this musical play where she had to emote.
Oh, true.
She
Okay.
had to go on a character arc.
I'm also flatting the outdoor set pieces, as we've discussed. The
Well, here's the I don't think that's worth a flat. I mean, I think the cameras, it's so interesting. I don't think
It
for
felt
that in the
so.
flat. It's hard. That's so hard
Well, so you
to
go and
do.
you're in the Abbey and things are so detailed and everything, and you get into the house, and although it could be more extravagant, they're on a budget, it is still extravagant. And then you have the outdoor patio, which is lovely and
The
everything.
whole thing looks like a Days of Our Lives set.
Oh, it
Only
totally does. Yes. But I'm
so,
saying, like,
why pick on the forest if everything looks like Days of Our Lives?
because it felt like. It felt rushed. It didn't feel like there was enough thought in it. And like, yeah.
Well, they needed space to do 16 going on 17. That's why if it looks barren
And a
or not a
mountain.
lot of trees, it's because they needed the dance space.
I also flatted Maria's party dress. I didn't like
You
it.
didn't like the pink and the gold?
No. I wish it was not a dirndl. I wish it was like a dress.
Well, that's the thing is that you note is that everyone's wearing elegant 1940s clothes, and they make this big point that she's a nursemaid. It makes sense for the nursemaid for a party. The nicest thing she has is a dirndl.
But that's all she wears. Every outfit that she has is that.
Not
except for the
until
hat.
She marries. That's also to symbolize that she becomes a woman.
And even then, it's just one dress, because then her performance dress is back to the dirndl. So she
gets
one.
It's what they wear in Salzburg.
Yes.
It's the nice clothes you wear. It's like you go to a wedding, all the gentlemen wear jackets and a tie. Why did I fumble?
I felt like
that?
They could have done something a little simple. How's that? It doesn't have to be an elegant ball gown or elegant evening dress. I was like, just give her something. Give her a different silhouette, please. Give her something different. I understand that it was probably the costume designers thought that Maria knows one pattern, and that's real for herself. My other flat is for the microphones going out, just because there's some times where I was like, I don't know what you're saying.
Go. Leave them alone.
Hey, this is my opinions.
I still heard everything they said. Sure, the mics weren't completely turned on, but I saw it. And also, it was dialogue that wasn't really important. Maria, what are you doing here?
I also flatted the girls' dresses in the wedding. I did not like that. I just didn't like them. That's it. There's no underlying thing.
Okay. That's fine.
Flatting.
See, that's understandable.
Flatting Maria's Act Two wig. It didn't.
Oh, the flat hair?
The flat hair, yeah. And then my last flat, this is a funny flat, Audra not saying cut face.
Well, you'll note that, I wonder if they changed it deliberately, because I paid attention. So, as you know, in the film, it's Maria, what is it you can't face about Captain Trap? But when Audra said it, she said, Maria, what is it you cannot face about? She added a not to make sure. What
and
is
that's
it you cannot
I was like,
face?
Say cut face. Come on. It's for, give it to your gaze. What were your flats?
I don't know if this was just the camera making it look like it, or if it was the actual sets, because the sets are beautiful, but I wonder if it was just placed in front of that NBC camera that the whole thing looked like a Days of Our Life set, like I said before.
I think it was actually the camera they used.
Yeah, I wonder if that's what made it look like a Days of Our Life set. The only
because there were moments as well that I was, when I was watching this, I was like, this feels like a soap opera. Like, it doesn't feel.
Yeah, and I wonder if it was just the camera that made it look like it and the way it's positioned and
yes.
things. The only real flat I have that I have not previously mentioned before was during the dance party, there is a little waltz section. I was not particularly in favor of that choreography, only because they're doing these weird flips and turns. They're picking up the girls,
yeah.
They're swooshing them around. It's supposed to be like My Fair Lady at the embassy ball. It's supposed to be this grand, luscious thing, more like the Great Waltz or the New Moon, like just beautiful waltzing. And what they gave me was just too modern and too flippy for such an intimate little like party. You know what I mean? Now,
like,
I know
they
that
the
dance break is in the show, but it needed to be a lot simpler and not so busy, because this is not a dance show. It is a singer show with some movement, and the only movement is that waltz section.
And
I just thought it was just too busy. It just really threw me out.
To piggyback off of you too, with this, the waltzing that happens on the patio, there isn't that much playing space, it feels like. Because there's the fountain in the middle
of it. It
felt
cramped,
and
when you have
the
busy choreography in a cramped space, it just looked chaotic.
Yeah. Yes. So, like, when I saw that there was a choreographer attached to this, I was like, there's dancing in this show?
That's the only dance section. Now, granted that, like, you know,
no,
Lonely
I mean,
Goat,
you could
her,
argue,
Do
like,
Re Mi, is
yeah.
But that's musical staging rather than choreography.
Right. But, like, the Landler. Landlier?
The Lundler.
The Lundler, yeah. That's
choreography. But again, the waltz needed to be like the Lundler. Something simple, not crazy.
No flips and tricks and things like that.
No, that was so unnecessary.
Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist from this version, though? That's the kicker. Whenever I ask that
Well,
question.
I was such a fan of this version when it came out. I did buy the soundtrack recording on CD. And I really enjoyed it. When I first saw it, it really rekindled my love for the show. But I'll have to say, like, in my life's playlist, like just in a regular playlist of my life, not something that, like, this is a song I live and die to. But I do love Laura Benanti and Christian Borle's rendition of How Can Love Survive. It's my favorite song from the show. It really is.
So I wasn't really paying attention to this, I'm not gonna lie. I've said it a couple times. And
Then how are you supposed to make critiques if you don't pay attention to things?
oh, I was like this in the you had the one eye on the phone and one eye on the screen. I don't know. I don't think I'm gonna add anything. I think I'm good. As much as I love Audra's operatic voice, I just You know what? I'll add Climb Every Mountain because of Audra. But on that note, Colden, we're done with the episode. Thank God.
Yeah, I was so worried about this one because
It's
I
just
didn't
very.
think we'd find something to talk about because it's not the film version and it's just a TV special and I was and I, and you know it's The Sound of Music. There's not much you can talk about, but I'm glad
Right.
we had enough for a podcast. The other thing I was worried about was, again, raining on Carrie Underwood's parade. And Carrie, I know you're not going to listen to this, but if you did listen to this, please don't take offense, honey. What you did up there was wonderful, and I appreciate you.
It sounds like we want her to do this again,
I
but
do. I want you to have a second chance.
a different thing. I don't know what she should do though,
Annie, get your gun, or Oklahoma.
or what if she was like the secondary lead, the supporting character, and somebody else was the lead.
Yeah, totally.
That could be an option as well, and that opens up even
Or,
more doors for her.
yeah, again, I don't like to crap on people. I really don't because no one goes, and this is just my general thing. No one goes into a project and say, okay, how can we piss off as many
Many
people as we
people,
can
yeah.
so they can write a podcast about us where they could just rip us a new one? I don't like being one of those people. I don't like being again, rain on people's parade because no one goes in trying to make a bad product. I sincerely believe that.
I feel like she did have a good base level with her acting in this. It's just that maybe with a little more time, because I don't know how much time they had to rehearse or to
They had
practice or everything.
6 weeks for one show.
Okay. That's I feel like she needed maybe a little more time because considering this is also her first big foray into acting, don't know if she acted prior to this, prior to Idol or anything like that. But yeah. She did it though. She did it. It's done. We all did it. Colden, what do you have to plug or promote?
I usually don't, but let's try something this time. So, as I record this episode, I don't know when it's being released. I am currently in a production of Into the Woods at Moonlight Amphitheater, and it's really exciting because we are using the original costumes designed by Anne Hold Ward, or Wold. Is it Ward or Wold?
Ward.
So I was right, Anne Hold Ward, and it's really exciting because some of the costumes have the original tags of the original cast. I got to
Oh my
try on Chip
goodness.
Zane's original Baker outfit, and it's kind of cool because, like many in the theatrical community, we hold that American Playhouse recording very sacred. And there's one particular outfit, Jack's mom's coat, that was used in the recording because there's a certain rip in the costume, and that rip is still in this package that we have. It's the coolest thing ever, y'all.
How long is the run?
Till May 18th.
Oh, it's after this.
But that's okay. That's what I did, folks, to go to show you that I don't, hang around in my parents' basement all day. The other
No,
thing.
I know you. I've seen you post things about shows that you've been in and everything, and other projects
Yeah.
that you're working on.
The biggest one I'm working on right now, folks, is I'm working on a dissertation, a personal dissertation for myself. I would like to write it. It's about the 1980 New York City opera production of Silver Lake. It was directed by Harold Prince. It was choreographed by Larry Fuller and had a book by Hugh Wheeler, which is the same creative team as Sweeney Todd. And unfortunately, this opera did not do very well and it's been lost to time. And it's been my job to kind of bring it back and make people aware of it. And I've been able to interview some of the original cast members and Larry Fuller, who choreographed it. And that's been my main thing I've been working on right now. It's not anything to plug or promote, but just let you know what I'm working on when I'm not doing my four part-time jobs.
You never know. Maybe somebody else who's listening to this is part of it and will reach out to you.
Yes, because everyone from the 1980 New York City opera production of Silver Lake wants to listen to the Sound of Music Live podcast.
You never know. You
As they
never
say in
know.
Paris, we shall see what we shall see.
And if you have any ideas for Carrie Underwood's next foray into musical theater, I'd love to hear about them. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at buttersongpod.
What's next week?
Well, buckle up, kids, because we're going in order. So you can look up when the lives happen. There's a few that I'm pushing to December, hint, hint. But if you want to be part of next episode's conversation, we're going to be talking about Peter Pan Live.
Have you seen the Peter Pan Live?
Bits and pieces.
All I will say to you, John, is this.
Buckle up.
No, no, no. Wait, give me one second. Peter Pan has found a mother. Now, I will say, I'll give you my little spiel on Peter Pan Live. The song Only Pretend is beautiful and glorious. That was an added song for the live. And Christian Borle is back as Mr. Smee. He always does a fantastic job. Other than that, good luck. Goodbye, good luck, good riddance. Oh, Kelly
And
O'Hara sings Distant Melody. Glorious. But Only Pretend that I think Amanda Green, who was Adolph Green's daughter, who's now a famous Broadway lyricist, she did additional lyrics for that, and she did Only Pretend, and it's a beautiful song. So give a listen to that when you
oh,
watch
I
that.
mean, yeah, when I watch the movie, it'll be in there, so that'll be good. But everyone, thank you for listening. Bye for now. Special thanks to Aaron Choi for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.